You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Hey Marcus, how are you going?
I'm a little bit fazed by this. Seeing people in person seems really strange.
Yeah, no, you've been, well, if you're not sure at home, Marcus has been doing Dear Science from the safety and comfort of his own home. So if you heard some of his kids in the background a couple weeks ago, that might be down to that. But how are you feeling about being back out and about?
Good, I think. Kids are back in school, so hopefully everything's going to be okay.
And how's the start of the semester treating you?
It's just the same as usual, hectic.
Just staring at like a grid of black screens.
Absolutely.
For a bunch of students. And we've got some cool stuff on Dear Science today. So the first topic that you're speaking about is that after COVID, your risk for diabetes increases. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this is one of, a growing number of issues that may affect people even after mild COVID infections. So we've probably heard about long COVID, which seems to have symptoms similar to ME or chronic fatigue syndrome. And that can be obviously extremely debilitating and is predicted to hit about somewhere around 1 in 10 people who catch COVID, which is a huge number. But then there's this next one, which is diabetes. So even mild COVID-2 infections can, it seems, amplify a person's chance of developing diabetes, especially for those already susceptible to the disease, but not only for those already susceptible. So they found that people who get COVID-19 have a greater risk of developing diabetes up to a year later, even after a mild COVID infection, compared with those who have never had the disease. And this was a massive study of almost 200,000 people, and the results have been published in The Lancet earlier this month. And it's one of a growing number of studies that's showing that COVID can increase a person's risk for diabetes months after infection.
It's kind of scary because people who already have diabetes are more susceptible to getting seriously ill from COVID. And now it seems that if you get COVID, you could get seriously ill from diabetes, which...
Yeah, and this is a problem. And we're not really thinking about this or talking about this. And it maybe goes at odds with strategies where we're sort of opening up and letting as many people as possible catch COVID, because down the line, there could be severe economic consequences if a large number of your workforce is unable to work. So in this study, there was more than 180,000 people who had survived for longer than a month after catching COVID. And they compared these with the records from two groups, each of which comprised about 4 million people without COVID infections. The analysis found that people who had COVID were about 40% more likely to develop diabetes up to a year later than were the people in the control group. That means for every 1,000 people studied in each group, roughly 13 more individuals in the COVID group were diagnosed with diabetes.
Wow.
Almost all the cases were type 2 diabetes, in which the body becomes resistant to or doesn't produce enough insulin. The chance of developing diabetes rose with the increasing severity of COVID. So people who were hospitalized or admitted to intensive care had roughly tripled the risk compared with control individuals who didn't have COVID at all. And even people who had mild infections and no previous risk factors for diabetes had increased odds of developing the chronic condition.
So if you're kind of thinking that COVID, you know, isn't too bad, it's just like the flu, down the line, we don't know what kind of extra horrible things might hit you, eh?
Absolutely. And I think for many people, COVID is a fairly mild infection. And unlike the cold, or unlike a case of the flu, usually there could be this sort of kickback down the line that really knocks you back.
Mm. We'll move on to the next topic, which is slightly better news, which is always nice. New clinical trials are showing promise for a pain pill that doesn't involve opioids. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the best or the most effective pain medications have until now, I guess, always been those that contain what are called opioids, and they're a class of drugs. OxyContin is a famous example, and morphine and others are similar. So this is a company called Vertex Pharmaceuticals is planning large trials that could support the approval of an experimental pain drug that may offer an alternative to opioids, which has shown promise in some smallish clinical trials for acute pain. The compound called VX-548, that's a catchy name, outperformed a placebo in phase two trials for two types of post-surgical pain. And the results pave way for larger trials that could lead to regulatory approval. And this is a major advance in the effort to supersede opioids, it says a neurobiologist at the University College in London who has studied the cellular channel that VX-548 targets. And there's a lot of optimism here that this could be a step away from opioids in treatment of acute pain. Now, opioids are very powerful pain relievers, but they can cause significant side effects, including slowed breathing, and they come with a potential for addiction. And an epidemic of overdose deaths in the US has prompted this hunt for safer alternatives. And these new trials grew out of research into what are called sodium channels on the surface of pain-sensing neurons, which let them fire electrical signals. One channel in particular is crucial to relaying pain signals, but it's been very, very difficult to target. A lot of research has been gone into targeting that channel, but years of research have been spent developing blocking drugs for that particular pain channel. But previous candidates for this have not really been any use, and previous candidates have been abandoned before they reach sort of phase three trials. And this is now the first drug which seems to have gone on to phase three trials that targets this channel. One trial, for instance, enrolled nearly 300 people preparing for a what's called a bunionectomy, where they slice off a bunion off of your foot, I guess.
Oh, my God.
Or leg. I think they were trying to standardize the type of pain by using people with repeatable injuries, so standard injuries. And these people were randomized. Some of them took the new drug, some of them took a placebo, and they periodically rated their pain, and people getting the highest dose of the new drug saw significantly greater pain reductions than those getting the placebo, which is clearly a good sign. They didn't so Lower doses of the drug didn't show statistical significant benefits, but the high dose showed the greatest benefits, and no significant side effects were recorded.
Wow! So soon we could be finding something that's a little bit better than codeine on our
a little bit less dangerous. Yeah,
a little bit less dangerous. Our final topic for today is a bit of a quirky one. So fish. I don't know if anyone considers fish particularly intelligent, but apparently new research has found that they could be capable of learning basic maths.
Yeah. So. There's a strong temptation to compare fish to some of my students, but two types of fish. So this is really sort of shocking, because we think of fish having, you know, 8-second memories and not really being able to be thoughtful or sentient or anything like that. But two types of fish, I think cichlids, I think that's how it's pronounced, and stingrays have been shown to be able to add and subtract small numbers.
Wow.
Which is hard for fish. They don't have fingers to count on, but they can do it, apparently. By training the animals to use blue and yellow colors as codes for the commands add one and subtract one, respectively, researchers showed the fish have this capability for basic maths. And to make this find, researchers in Germany adopted the design of a similar experiment that had been conducted in bees. Apparently bees do it. They focused on these two types of fish, cichlids and stingrays, which the lab had used previously to study fish cognition. And in the training phase, the scientists showed a fish in a tank an image of up to 5 squares, circles, and triangles that were all either blue or yellow. The animals had 5 seconds to memorize the number and color of these shapes, and then a gate opened, and the fish had to choose between two doors, one with an additional shape and the other with one fewer shape. And the rules were simple. If the shapes in the original image were blue, they were supposed to head for the door with one extra shape. If they were yellow, then they were supposed to go for the door with one fewer. Now, reading this out, this is not straightforward. No. I think many of us would struggle with this task.
But these fish can do it.
They can do it. So choosing the correct door earned the fish a reward. So that was their motivation. And only 6 of the 8 cichlids and 4 of the 8 stingrays successfully completed their training. But those that made it through testing performed well above chance. In other words, just random guessing. When shown 3 blue shapes, for example, the animals correctly chose the door with 4 blue shapes instead of 2. With over 96% and 82% accuracy for the stingrays and cichlids, respectively. Both species, interestingly, found subtraction slightly more difficult than addition on all the tests, a feeling likely shared by most toddlers or students. To make sure the animals weren't just memorizing patterns, the researchers mixed in new tests varying the size and the number of the shapes. So in one trial, the fish presented with 3 blue shapes were asked to choose between doors with 4 or 5 shapes, a choice of +1 or +2 instead of the usual +1. But they managed to figure it out and do this. And apparently, and this was surprising me, this isn't a big surprise. The scientists were quoted saying, "It didn't really blow my mind that they were capable of doing it." This is a scientist at Macquarie. Other animals, including parrots and bees, have demonstrated similar aptitude for working with numbers. Despite not having the brain structures that humans rely on for condition, they managed to match our basic arithmetic skills.
Wow.
So fish aren't stupid. Fish are smart.
No, fish, parrots, bees. So if anyone was worried about an AI takeover, you know, machines ruling the world, you might be more concerned about animals first.
Absolutely.
Cool, that was Dear Science. Thank you very much for joining us in studio, Marcus.
You're welcome.
Catch you later.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.